Hello and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint, the podcast highlighting and telling the stories of influential leaders in and around the sports industry. Today, we are excited to welcome our next guest, Reggie Walker, to the show. Reggie is a former NFL player who had a seven-year stint in the league with stops at the Arizona Cardinals, the San Diego Chargers, and finished up with the Denver Broncos. After a decorated career, he hung up his cleats and is now sharing his experiences to impact folks all across the country. Reggie is now a personal coach and telling his story of overcoming mental, physical, and sexual abuse. He was inspired by seeing so many others fail that had access to more resources, more tools, and more ability than he did. His journey to get here is beyond incredible, but it doesn't compare to the impact that he's making today by sharing his story. He currently lives in Kansas City, but for the next 45 minutes, he's here with us on Checkpoint. Reggie, my man, welcome to the show. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be here. And thanks for the great introduction.
Man, I tell you, the feedback never seems to amaze me. And the biggest one is around the intro. So, you know, we're just trying to make you guys special and, you know, give our guest an insight as to who you are. So, you know, just for all you first time listeners, you know, Checkpoint, we're going to spend the next 45 minutes taking, a peek underneath the hood and understanding who Reggie is. Again, how he got here, what he's currently doing, and where he sees the world going. So, Reggie, we got a ton to unpack today, a crazy story. Let's take us all the way back to Alaska, where this thing kicked off for you. And why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are?
Okay, a little bit about me. Okay. and I always feel weird talking about myself. But, yeah, so I was born in Alaska. My parents were in the military. I was a military brat. You know, I feel like I had a really blessed upbringing because I got to experience a lot from a lot of different social dynamics. As far as I was in situations where I was a part of the majority population, where I was part of the minority population, where we had money, where we didn't have money, lived in the suburbs, lived in the city. And, you know, I thought it was a blessing to understand things from that angle. But it really helped me to understand people and where people come from on a different angle. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. And then, you know, do you want me to just kind of go through the whole thing or?
Man, it's you. So, I mean, it's really interesting. And, you know, with that military background, the perspective is key, right? And, I mean, I think that helps shape your journey. And, you know, so starting in Alaska, you know, I know that sports have been a pillar of your life for, you know, the majority of it. So I'm curious, when did you start playing football? When did you pick that up there or when you came to mainland? When did that come into your life?
Oh, definitely mainland.
But no football in Alaska.
I actually picked it up at a very young age. Football was something that When I first saw it, I remember I was looking in front of the TV. I might have been five, and I remember seeing these big, you know, to me they just seemed superhumans, you know, on TV. And I remember thinking like, "Whoa, this is real! Like, are these human beings?" And then I remember asking my dad, like, you know, "What is this?" And he was just like, "This is football, man, and you know, you can do the same." And ever since then, I was like, I can do the same. Like, I want to do the same. And then, but one of the big things, you know, just like we had discussed the other day, is I had bought into the idea of the American dream at a very young age, as far as, you know, you work hard in school, you go to college, you get it, you work hard, you get a good job, have, you know, 2.5 kids, 3 kids, and everything will be complete. And I felt that, you know, if I use football, I could get there. I could live that happy, fulfilled lifestyle, because during the time I was very miserable. I was going through a lot, because from the period of when I was about 4 to 12, that's when I got molested. Mm. And growing up too, I dealt with a lot of mental abuse, physical, sexual abuse. So having sports as a coping mechanism, or just it was like a safe haven. It was therapy for me because at the time you're such a young kid, you can't verbalize these things and all the issues going out. So football saved me in a lot of ways.
And I think it does for a lot of people, you know, and I mean, that's been one of the interesting thing with Checkpoint is as we're, you know, bringing on influential people in sport, you know, we only know Reggie Walker as the captain of the Cardinals and, you know, making plays out there with the Chargers. We don't really understand what that journey was like to get there, right? Like, what is fueling each tackle? And I'm, you know, excited to unpack, you know, that lineage and that story for you. So keep moving through your childhood here, right? So you start playing football, you get to this point, and you start feeling and going through these experiences that are way out of your control. You become molested, you're experiencing mental abuse, physical abuse. And for a lot of the listeners, they'll nod their head and be like, yeah, like, I mean, if I can do one thing, I'm going to channel that into football and go knock the absolute piss out of somebody, right? That'll take care of it. Were you sort of experiencing the same thing, or is that how you viewed it?
Yeah, how I viewed it was, you know, it was therapeutic to go out there and you're in an environment where you can be the most violent person and it's encouraged. And since I couldn't verbalize this secret that I was living with, for, you know, I would just go out there, be the most violent guy I could think of, get some pats on the back, go through it, go home, and then go throughout my day the next day, and then just kind of bide my time until I could get back out there again. Because it was like an accordion, you know, it would build up, and then I'd come out and I just, but it would build up every day. So I was constantly doing this until, but with all that energy that was getting pent, that was getting built up over time. And funneling that into football, you know, as well as other sports, because I played baseball and rugby too, and I was really good at those.
Yeah.
I really excelled. I really excelled. And, you know, I was also playing linebacker. So being a crazy guy, you know, being a linebacker is this extremely encouraged. I was glad, I'm glad that I did have it. Even though it did down the line have a very negative effect. But during that time, if I didn't have it, there's no telling where I would have gone. There's no telling if I'd be here right now. There's no telling if I wouldn't be in jail or, you know, mess around and killed somebody. Because there was so much anger and rage and this big time violent side that I had from just not having control over getting molested and with all the abuse and dealing with all this stuff and like literally getting picked on and bullied. And I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know how to deal with it. So if I didn't have football, there's no telling where I'd be right now.
Well, and I think a lot of people don't know how to deal with it, right? Like, you know, we just had a guest on the show, Eric Cusin, who, you know, started a movement that, you know, the hashtag Same Here movement, and his nonprofit, We're All a Little Crazy, is breaking the stigma of mental illness and really promoting mental health and how we equip not just athletes, but everybody with these tools to get to this place where, you know, we feel good about ourselves because we all experience these crazy life events that happen towards us. And so to get in your brain a little bit, you know, because I played football growing up. What was it like where you knew what was going on was fueling this behavior for you to be uber violent, and which ultimately made you a really good football player, and then you had nowhere to talk about it? What put us in the head of Reggie? Like, I mean, as you were climbing the ranks at K-State and going into the league, did that become more and more challenging, or what was that, you know, sort of journey like as you almost had, you know, to be a persona and then like what was really going on?
Oh, it was crazy. I was two people. I was basically two people. On one hand, I was super nice guy, funny guy, people person, could get along with anybody, there for anyone. If they needed help with anything, I'm there. I'm going out of my way to make sure I help other people. Then, but inside, there was this hate, like this hate for like the world, for people, for everything. It was like a cancer or like a poison or like, you know, just something otherworldly that was just there. And it was something that it took everything to try to maintain all through college, because in high school, I felt like it popped up during college. But during college, during my professional career, and it was something that I would just unleash when I played football. But by the time I think when I got to my junior year of college, that's when I started really realizing that this other thing that I'm dealing with, and I'm using football as a crutch to deal with it. And I need to start talking about it. I need to get this out of me. This isn't healthy. This isn't something that, like this will kill me. Like I knew my junior year that it was going to, like, this is going to be something that ultimately would kill me, or be something ultimately that would make me never have a good relationship with somebody, something that would keep me from being happy in general. Because, you know, my junior year, that's when I sunk into a very deep depression. And just kind of a little background on my situation in college. My first year was great. You know, I played as a true freshman. We get a coaching change, and the coach that came in, it was the type of situation where you meet people who whatever image or whatever thought they have about you when they first meet you, that's what you are. And you can't change that no matter what you do, no matter what you say, no matter what's going on. If I think you're this, that's what you are. And that's what the situation was. So I had a coach who, for 3 years straight, every single day, like literally every day, did everything possible to try to get me to quit. He did everything possible to just tear me apart as a person. It wasn't hard coaching. It wasn't, you know, just work harder or tough coaching. No, this was, I'm attacking you as a man. Like, I'm attacking you as a person. I want to break you mentally, emotionally, however I can do it, because I just don't like you. There's something about you that just, I can't stand. And with me already going through this stuff that I came into college with, that accordion started stretching. And like, it would stretch out, and then when it came together, it was making such a big impact that I was literally like shattering myself each time, you know, to the point where, you know, I was drinking all the time. I was pretty much full blown drunk in college. Pretty much, which is pretty typical for a lot of athletes, apparently.
We shouldn't gloss over that, right? You have the highest performing athletes on this pedestal of the country, and behind, like, once they get off the screen or off the practice field, there's all this stuff going on, and we'll get to that here in a second. But we couldn't just let you gloss over that. So keep rocking.
No. It's especially when you're dealing with a situation where it's not just regular stress; it's toxic stress. You know, it's a whole different level of stress that you're dealing with, and you know, I'm dealing with that on top of this situation with this coach, and on top of this situation with like all these undealt with issues, and I'm doing anything to kind of keep myself together. So, you know, so I was drinking every day.
Now, question for you real quick before we move on, because, you know, obviously Dak just came out, you know, last week about, you know, his depression, you know, really being vulnerable and using his platform to talk about some of the things that he's gone through. And we saw Skip Bayless's reaction to it. I'm curious, when you were coming up through college, and I know you had this coach that was negative, but were there resources? Was mental health talked about? What was that experience like? Like, did you have channels that you just didn't pursue, or did you just feel like you had to internalize everything?
I felt like, well, there's two. Well, okay. So at the time, you know, because I was going through college, you know, from 08 to, from 05 to about 08. And mental health was not something that was just a big deal in general, like in our country, in college sports. It just wasn't what it is now. And I do remember I did go to a therapist one time, but just like my situation was very similar to a lot of other athletes. I go in and I talk to this person. I'm telling them what's going on. They cannot relate at all. Not even a little bit. There's a huge disconnect And so I go in there, talk to them one time, and then I had a bad experience. So I was like, I'm never doing that again. Plus two, how I was, because it was because with the situation with my coach, with him trying to do everything to turn the team against me, and I felt like I didn't have anyone. And it wasn't a situation where I could go and call my parents and they could really give me a lot of feedback on it, because I'm a college athlete, you know, unless they actually went through it themselves, there's only so much that they can do to help me. You need, like, I didn't have another athlete who had gone through the same situation that's there who could help me out. Somebody, I didn't have any relatable person there that could help me through this. I didn't have that. So I did dealt with all of it on my own, but however I could get it dealt with. And it, like, it was definitely brutal. It was definitely brutal, you know, going home sometimes. And I, like, sometimes it was every day I would go to practice and go to my room and just sit in the dark. I was full blown, looking back at it, like, clinically depressed. And but the thing about it, nobody knew it, not even my roommates, because all they see is fun Reggie, happy go lucky Reggie, guy who's, you know, party animal, guy who's, you know, this guy on the field that we can depend on. Who seems like everything's good. But, you know, I was just throw my mask on. And then as soon as I get to my room, it was like, oh, you know, and I just sit there. I didn't know that I was dealing with clinical depression at the time.
And I think there's so much education around it, Reggie, that we don't talk about that, you know, and quick little caveat here, mental health and what you experience is just one aspect. But like as an athlete, there's multiple arenas that we are just not educated on that we are asked to go ahead, you know, financial literacy is another one, you know, like, I mean, there's all of these, you know, what I will call foundation pillars that, you know, as we're going through these pristine universities and these amazing opportunities at the pro level, you're not even taking time to develop me as a human. You just only care about me as the commodity. And then when I'm done, oh, well, good luck, Reggie, you know? And I always found that crazy where it's like you spend so much time at the field house or with this coach, with your teammates, your players, and they still don't know. I'm like, if they're not going to know in this environment, what are the chances that, you know, in the real world, anyone's going to figure it out? And so really, really quite interesting. Just to hear this. And now I'm thinking back on my playing days and I'm like, how many guys were in my locker room that just were going through this? I didn't have the channel to say it. And I only knew him as the party guy or only knew him as the, you know, dependable football player. It just sort of makes you scratch your head.
Yeah. You know, and two things to say to that, because most of the time when you're dealing with people who are really depressed, like I was, a lot of times you're not going to even know it straight up. You're just not going to know it because we are really good at giving you what you want, showing you what you want. But, you know, also too, when it comes to a lot of these athletes, a lot of them do not, thinking about a situation where you're 17, 18 years old, you literally a month ago had a 10 o'clock curfew, and then now you're expected to have two full-time jobs and be excellent at both of them, on top of being on TV every week, on top of the schedule that they get you, which is like, you won't even have time to think. And there's just it's a situation that most adults would just not be great in. But you're expecting a 17, 18 year old, 19, 20, 21 year old, 22 to just be great at it. And, you know, there isn't a lot of empathy when it comes to that, because people are like, oh, I wish I could get my college paid for. I wish I could be on TV every week. But being in that situation, just like you nailed it on, was if you don't come into that situation with a lot of skills, like understanding how to manage yourself, time management skills, really knowledge of who you are and why you are this way, understanding like why are you here in the first place, like why am I even playing ball? Because there's so many questions that you need to go into that situation really understanding to just keep yourself level. Because once you're in it, you're in it. And then being at toxic stress, being on TV, being in a situation where, you know, if you had a bad game, I'm not showing up to class the next day, you know, because I'm not about to have the whole school look at me, you know. And on top of, you know, you're on ESPN getting shook or something. Like, yeah. Oh my God. You know, it's so much to deal with.
Yeah.
But that's why you see so many people fail. Like I think I might have came in with 27, and I know the numbers aren't exactly right, but I think I came in with that like 25, 27 in my recruiting class, and I think four of us finished.
Wow.
Like four of us finished. And people were like, well, how's that? You just didn't try hard. Like, dude, if you knew what this was, it chews people up and spits them out, you know.
The devil's in the details, right? Like, and we all as humans want what we can't have. And then, you know, when you get it, you're like, oh, shit, I didn't even know what I signed up for here. I mean, it's, and there's pros and cons to each one, right? Because like you said, like, you know, you got a great education, you built relationships, you were able to go ahead and play this game at the highest level. I just think it's really interesting what we personify about the athlete, whether it's a student athlete or professional athlete, versus the reality of what is going on. And I think in 2020, it's more imperative now than ever to break that taboo to say Reggie Walker first is a human, then he is a football player, then he is, you know, you fill in the rest, right? You could put a mile long of your accolades, but you're a human being first. And I think that we have to start embracing these folks as humans. And so I'm going to speed up just a little bit here, right? So we're at K-State, you're going through it. Take me to your senior year where it's like, okay, there's an opportunity to take this game that I have a love-hate relationship with, more love at the time, and I can go play at the next level. How did you handle that as it all started to become from a dream to a reality?
First and foremost, I always knew I was going to go to the league.
Really?
I had the mentality, and you know, people will see, but people that know me at least, I'm probably the most resilient. I'm the most resilient person I've ever met. You know, and I'm a humble guy. But
you going to pat your back for me there, Reggie?
Yeah. But just the proof is in the pudding, because I knew I was going to make it no matter what, because in my mind, especially at that time, because I was dealing with so much, I really felt that if I can make it to the NFL, everything that I've gone through would be worth it. I'll finally be happy. I will finally touch happiness, because I hadn't touched it before. And so when it came down to me making it into the league, to me, it was life or death. So I knew I was going to make it. But even during my senior year and my whole time in college, I never started more than half a season. Never. Because dealing with the coach, he did everything possible not to put me out on the field. But he had to play me because I knew how to get onto the field. I'm a very strategic guy from my dad. He has a logistics background. So he taught me a lot about relationships and people and understanding situations. And that was the only reason I even played in the first place. But going back to my senior year, I had been going through all this stuff with this guy. I was dealing with all this trauma. And then I finally had like a breaking point where I was just like, I'm sick of being miserable. Like, I am so sick of this. I'm sick of hurting all the time. I'm sick of being angry all the time. I was just like, you know what? Like, I was getting screwed around on the field again. So I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to make sure that my senior year, I have the best year of football I ever played. Like, I'm going to have a good time. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing experience. We sucked, you know, we lost a lot of games. You know, I lost a lot of games in college. But, you know, as far as from a mental standpoint, that was one of my most mentally solid years that I had, because I really understood how to kind of put things to the side, and I was becoming more aware of what was going on with me internally. And that's when I first started to not really run from it. Mm-hmm. So I was also becoming more comfortable with that fact of things. And then, so, you know, I go do my senior year. We had a guy named Josh Freeman who ended up going first round. So I think when they were watching his film and watching another guy, we had a defensive end named Ian Campbell. When they were watching their film, they saw me and they're like, who's this guy? You know, but I came out with so many red flags because I only started half a season. Like, you would see my film, I'd get a sack or I'd make a big play, and then the next play I wouldn't be on the field. And then they were like, what's going on? And I was just like, and then you can't in the meetings tell them what's happening because it's going to make you look a certain way. And I was just like, well, you know, that's something that you'd have to talk to him about.
Interesting.
But, you know, got to pick out of five teams. And it actually turned into a really great situation, made the team, and it was a dream come true. But I think around my second year of playing in a league, I was sitting there in my apartment. I'm like, man, I'm in the league. I got to that point that I wanted to get to for so long. And I was like, where's this fulfillment coming? Like, when is it coming? When's this happiness coming? I was like, I'm still the same guy. Like, I accomplished the goals and nothing changed. And then that's when I started to like sink again. Like, and this time it was like a free fall.
Really?
Yeah, it was a big time free fall.
And as you're now in the professional environment, you're away from that coach at K-State, you know, you have a different locker room, a different feel. I'm curious at this point, you know, still 2010 at this point, maybe 11, any resources for mental health, any resources from the team? Or did you just say, hey, I'm going to go right back to the behavior that I knew and I'm just going to sort of get me from A to Z and I'll show up and play when I have to and then sort of go back to it? What was that mentality like as you were going through that free fall? Did you feel at that point you could reach out, or was it still internal?
It was internal until I got to the point where every Wednesday we would have Bible study. And we had a guy named Jason Wright, who's actually like, you know, president of the Redskins now.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I remember talking to him one day and I was falling apart. And I remember just telling him like, dude, I'm going through a lot. And he was just like, you know what? Like, I want you to talk to Pastor Chad Johnson, who's like, he's pretty famous now. He led our Wednesday Bible study. He, you know, Jason was just like, you know, after Bible study, he came up, was just like, you know, got me in touch with Chad. And then me and Chad talked about it. And that was the second time I had actually talked about it, because I told one girlfriend in college briefly, but that was really the first time that I had fully opened up about everything that had happened and what was going on to me mentally. And thank God he was there, because he knew how to handle it. He knew how to handle it. And he got me in touch with this pastor/therapist. And then that was the first time I started doing therapy. And I met with him 3 times, did what people typically do and think like, okay, I talked about it. Like, I'm all healed now. Everything's good.
That magic pill, right? Like, you snap your fingers, we're good.
it was definitely not good. But that was the first time that I talked about it. But that started, you know, that kind of started me on this path of like healing, because I finally am face to face now with what's going on. And I'm face to face now knowing that this is something that needs to be dealt with. Like, this isn't something I could keep playing football and burn myself out at practice and then not deal with it during the day. Like, no, this is something that would, this is going to, like, you got to deal with this, bro.
Yeah. So, and so now, you know, we're both athletes, right? So we know what that locker room environment's like. And, you know, although we all may come from different parts of the country, the world, chances are the variance of what we're experiencing is somewhere within 1 or 2 degrees, right? Like, I mean, it's we're all cut from a very similar cloth, I feel like, especially in a football locker room. So I'm curious, as you started to go through the journey, becoming more comfortable, you're talking about it. When did you start to go and tell your teammates, or did you ever tell your teammates and coaches about what you had experienced and were actively living while serving as, hold on, folks, the captain of the football team, which is still just mind-boggling how you wore both of those.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy how, you know, but when you're putting all this insane energy into playing football, like, in, you know, being violent is highly encouraged. And it does help your play. You know, I did get a lot of respect from my team, and it is something that I look back on, getting voted as a team captain. I look back at it in pride. Because, you know, I love those guys. I've always loved whoever I played with. And I know when you're fighting those battles week by week and it's you against the world, you know, you do form some bonds. And what happened was I started talking to this, you know, I was talking to the pastor, you know, stop doing that. But because I started talking to him, that's when I finally became okay with just kind of talking to some of the other guys on the team about what happened. And what was so great about it was because all of us come from very similar backgrounds, which is something people don't really understand. Like, a lot of these guys come from broken homes, poverty, abuse-filled backgrounds. And we prop it up, like, look at all these triumphs this guy comes through and blah, blah, blah. But they don't sit there and think the effects this stuff has on people. Like, when I started, the wildest part about, I think it was about my third year when I was a captain, when I actually started telling certain guys on the team what happened to me. The wildest part that I always kept with me was whenever I told my story, they would always sit back and tell me, I'm telling you, it was like pretty much every guy I talked to. They're like, same thing happened to me. And the thing that shocked me about that was I would always ask them, when was the first time that you actually said this to someone? And they're like, just now. That's the first time I've talked about it. And I'm like, wow, especially what, you know, thinking about it and thinking about how, what I was dealing with and the mental state I was in, emotional state I was in, what is going on with them? You know, like, and you wonder why, because to get from college to the NFL, the biggest thing that separates college players from NFL players is 1,000,000% of mindset and what's fueling you to do it.
Yep.
Like, it's, why are you here in the first place? And I told you, my reason was, like, not even starting half a season in college, like, going through all that. My reason to be in the NFL was I was trying to find happiness. Like, so you could only imagine how much fuel I had pent up. And you see all the other people around you, they're getting fueled by whatever it is. At the same time, people have gone through tragic losses, all, you know, same abuses as me, coming from these, you know, trying to take care of mom. Like, I got to take care of mom. You know, and that's what separates people. But that mindset destroys you at the same time. It's like you're burning the candle at both ends.
And we feel like we can't talk about that, right? Because that makes us less, or it's like, you know, or it's like, hey, that didn't happen directly to me. It happened to my family, or it happened to my ex-girlfriend, or, but, like, you know, it was talk to me, and it was like, we're just got a front row seat at a boxing match. And as each punch is thrown and that blood splatters, just think of that just accumulating, right? One after another and after another. And then these coaches, this environment where it's like, if I fix this person as a person and start to clean up the blood, well, then he becomes a worse football player because then he becomes more whole, or at least that's the mentality around it. I don't think that's true. And so you absorb so much, but you have nowhere, like you said, your accordion, right? You just got to squeeze it one time a week. And so going in your head, I'm really fascinated right now. What was it like? Did that light bulb just go off where you tell somebody and they're like, yo, Reggie, I got the same shit going on here. Or let me tell you my story. Like, what was that epiphany like when you're like, hey, I'm not in this thing alone on the field or in my own head?
Because I thought for so long living with this secret of, you know, the abuse and then, you know, the sexual abuse, especially, I thought nobody could understand me. I thought no one could relate. I thought I was just, you know, this planet wandering throughout the solar system with, you know, nothing keeping me. I'm just floating. Like, you know, I think I talked to someone. I just felt like you're floating throughout space. You can't breathe, but you can't die either. Wow. And then you're just like constantly choking. But then at the same time, you know, after a while, you just start getting really pissed because you're not dying. This sucks and no one gets it. So then at a certain point, you just start getting really angry. And then it just grows and grows and grows and grows from just being so lonely and wishing that there was just somebody and like somebody gets you. So I felt like, whoa, there's other people like me. But then I also started understanding this is a problem. Like, this is a huge problem. Like, because if I'm feeling this way, I wonder how you're feeling deep down. I wonder how you're feeling. And then we're in an environment where you're basically a barbarian and you're not supposed to talk about feelings. Like, you're a guy too. And you're not supposed to talk about this stuff, even though we're human beings, we're feeling creatures. You know, we have emotions, but you're not supposed to act like these things exist, you know, which is so wild. So it just blows up and keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then people wonder why a lot of these NFL guys do the wild stuff that they do. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of the work from Nadine Burke Harris, but she talks about adverse childhood experiences and the effect that it can have on people, especially with their long-term health. And I highly encourage people to really look up her name, look up her work, and understand that just one message, really, if I could get this across to people, is, yeah, cheer these guys on, and yeah, they're underdogs, and yeah, you know, they're doing something that's, you know, only a few people could do, but understand this stuff has effects to it. And when you see people doing wild stuff or doing stuff that in your mind, oh, I'd never do that. Like, if you understood what these adverse childhood experiences have on people, don't be shocked. Like, and then you're not encouraging them to talk about it or be emotional about it. Like with the DAC situation, like, and then you wonder why people blow up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get how people don't understand how that doesn't connect.
And we got to break this stigma because it was painted to me in a really interesting light where it was like, if I come out and say I have bipolar or I suffer from depression, now all of a sudden I become this flight risk for an organization. Mm-hmm. But if I tear my ACL, now, you know, then it's like, hey, you know, that'll repair and, you know, your value will go back up. You know, you'll have a little ding on your record. But if I come out with a mental illness or a mental health issue, then all of a sudden there's an asterisk that follows you around your career. And I think the more we hear stories like yourself and athletes that are in the league, that are out of the league, in many sports, it's like, man, we got to get back to these people are, in order to perform and do what they do, there's a mental toll that goes into that without anything else from the childhood. And so I'm curious, as you now have gone through multiple iterations, you know, as a player, as an advocate, do you see the pendulum swinging and those conversations happening more? Or what is your thoughts on where we stand right now with mental health in sports?
I feel like we're still at the beginning stages of dealing with it. And then I feel like we're in the experimental stage where we're trying certain things, but as far as like dealing with the issue, they still haven't like nailed what needs to get done to get it done. Especially when you consider, like you look at the fact that on a college team, there's 100-something guys, and then there's one therapist. You have one sports psychologist.
What?
You know, and then one of, especially in a situation where when you're dealing with the politics, the political side of things that get introduced to you, the business side of things that get introduced to you once you sign your name on a dotted line and go to college, and because you deal with it in the NFL as well. Now you're dealing with a whole nother element to things, and you're on TV now. You're dealing with all the stress. People know who you are. Everywhere you go, people are running up to you. And not to mention, hopefully you don't come from a situation that I came from. You're still going to go through it. And you have no one there, which is probably the biggest thing. You have no one there that can relate to your experience that's there specifically just for you. Just for you. Just to help you, bro. Like, I'm here just to help you. I've been here. I've been in your shoes. I'm here to help you. And not there to, you know, try and be a coach, or I'm here for any ulterior motive just to help you. Like, I'm a guy who's been there, because that's what I knew. I knew I needed that. I knew other players needed that. They needed like an advocate, like somebody that was there that could help them. But because of the situation and the control that a lot of these institutions have, is, you know, as well as a lot of these businesses are going to have, because, you know, the league is a business, you know, people don't have that relatable figure. They don't have anybody who they can really open up to, because thank God I had the other players on the team that could relate to me, because if I didn't have them, I would have never talked about this stuff. I probably would have waited who knows how long to just even say that I was hurting, you know, but because of the team dynamics and you guys grow close, like, you can open up to these other guys. You know, you can trust them. But when you're operating in a den full of snakes, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm bitter of what the situation is. The situation is what it is.
Yeah.
Period.
Say that again. Like, it just is what it is.
It is what it is. If you don't want to sit there and look at my example from what I'm saying, you think I'm some bitter guy that wish things would have gone. No, I'm glad I love my career. I got everything I wanted out of mine, you know, but when you're talking about the news clippings and the media, and you see what's going on with college sports, and you see what's going on with the league and all the turmoil, I didn't make it this way. It's what the situation is. And when you don't have relatable figures on those teams that these guys can feel like they can use as a resource, like, you're dealing with ticking time bombs, pretty much. And that's exactly what happened with me when I got done. Like, I exploded. Yeah. Because, you know, I have to say this. So when I got to San Diego, it was my second year being there. I had an injury. And then when I had the injury, it finally set me down, because I hadn't gotten hurt to the point where, like, it really made me start thinking about, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking, you know, like, really realizing things, like, I hate this. I hate this. Like, I've hated this probably since my second year. I didn't sign up for this. You know, I've already done everything I wanted to do with this.
Before we go down the hate path, because I want to ask you one football question.
Yeah.
You played against some incredible opponents. You played with some incredible football players and for some great coaching staffs. Are there any, like, I mean, is there one play that sticks out, or is there a sequence or a run that sticks out to you that you're just like, man, on the field, this is my highlight? Because I want to go where you're going, but before we move on from football, I had to ask you.
Oh man, to be honest, there are so many, because like there were so many. Like I remember my first year when we played the Saints in the playoffs, and in the playoffs on a punt return, like I smacked Reggie Bush, right? And I remember getting up like, oh my God, I smacked Reggie Bush. Like I leveled him.
It was
a shock. I remember when I hit Marshawn Lynch, and I was like, I remember I got shook by LeSean McCoy, shook me, and I was like on a stage, like you know how the guitarist or the bassist would be like, and then, like, like that's how I did.
Oh, I love that.
When I sit there and say that, you know, I hated it. I hated the job. I hated the job. I didn't hate football, but I hated everything else involving it. Like, you know, you don't have a life. Everyone's watching you. You're under the microscope all the time. The stress, the pressure. Like, you just get over that over time. And they tell you when you go into it, the other guys tell you, you're going to come to a point where you're going to know you're done. You know, and I was just done. You know, it's not, I was just done. Plain and simple. It wasn't that, you know, anything other than the fact that I was just, it was my time, you know.
It happens. And one thing that's really interesting, especially about football, you know, like these highly, you know, where contact is so high, you know, did you suffer concussions, or do you feel like you had, CTE coming out of the league? And so trying to deal with your mental health stuff that was, you know, you've been building up your whole life. And now you have these other components that, you know, through your channel, you have made maybe a little worse. Did you experience any relationship between the two there?
Yes, I did. 100%. And even to this day, like, because again, I was a linebacker, I played very violent, very violent. I had a concussion in college that was very bad, like very bad. I had a really bad one in college. I had a really bad one when I was with Arizona, my third year. It took me out 4 games. I felt like I've never really been the same mentally ever since that one. That one in Arizona, that one really kind of did me in. And then, you know, they say you get the concussions from when you, you know, you get your bell rung or stuff like that. That stuff happens all the time. So as far as head injuries go, there's no telling how many concussions I've had. Wow. But I do know that with my depression and my anxiety and, you know, being bipolar or other specified, I know that a lot of that has come from these issues as well. Like, yes, I've had the childhood trauma and all that, but as far as when things started, especially when I got done, when things started like really sinking, it was when I got done. And then the crutch of football was taken away, and I actually started trying to deal with these issues, and then things started popping up when I was done too.
Wild, man. You hear about this on ESPN. You hear about this, you know, in the tabloids. It's another experience to be sitting face to face with somebody and taking a, you know, a 70,000 foot view or journey that you went through. It's moving, man. And you know, I mean, it's commendable that you are at a place where you're able to go ahead and be whole with Reggie, and now, you know, be able to go and teach one, right? Like something we live by here. One of our mantras is you reach one, you teach one. But success is really when you get to that place where you are where you're at, and now you have the ability to go ahead and give back, right? And so there's like this almost space that opens up. And so I'm curious, Reggie, now, you know, you move on from the league, you have a decorated 10-year, you hang up the boots. What are you doing now? Where, you know, through your speaking and your coaching, what does that look like as you're giving back to up-and-coming athletes or just humans in general?
Oh, well, it's, you know, just like you reach one, you teach one, you know, and also too, going through that situation where you see so many people fail for so many different reasons, because like I said, my dad, you know, he didn't, like, I was telling him this literally yesterday, like, he didn't teach me how to fish or change a tire. But the thing that he did teach me that was even more valuable than that is he taught me how to deal with people. And then he taught me how to, he gave me situational awareness. He understood, he helped me understand how to maximize on myself, how to look at the bigger picture of things. So even though I was going through all those issues in college, the thing that saved me was what my dad taught me, because I was able to understand, you know, where the hole's at, where I fit into the bigger picture, how to talk to people, how to maneuver, how to understand basically the game within the games, operating within the political system, understanding, you know, the business side of what this is, which so many kids don't. And that's probably the biggest reason why so many kids fail in college sports as well as the NFL, is because you don't understand the business aspect. But I understood that even while I was basically keeping it together. And with seeing so many people fail all the time, I realized that this is a problem, and I felt like I was the one I need to solve this, especially understanding that there's a lot of Reggies out there that don't have someone that they can relate to. So I wrote a program, and it was really one of those things where it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I must have just seen a YouTube video, and it said, like, if you got an idea, write it down. And then I just started writing it down. And then I kept writing for 3 years.
Wow.
And then I wrote this program, and then I wrote a book at the same time. And right now the rough draft of it should be done in a month and a half. But I wanted to build a manual for kids who are going into the situation on just how to operate through this, like to be in a way to help them go into the situation with a plan from someone who's gone through it and has gone through the worst of it, and how to really come out on top of it. Because a lot of it to me is just really, it's a mindset that people just don't have. And then with my program, it's literally built to just kind of instill the tools to do the same exact thing for not just athletes, but for people in general. And then, you know, I do the public speaking thing because I understand that the more that I can be as open as possible with what happened to me, I know that there's people out there that are going to hear this and be okay with saying what happened to them. It helps to create spaces, safe spaces, you know. And I usually don't like saying safe space, like a safe space, but at the same time, that's what it is. Because right now I understand there is a lot of ticking time bombs, just like me, that just like how I was out there. And the more I can say this and be as open, the better for them.
Well, and you know, specifically to athletes, but, you know, now that we're all going through a global pandemic together, you know, this is really an equalizer. And, you know, maybe if you were at a place where you could put the mask on and go bury your head in work, or, you know, you could find other channels, maybe not a professional football player, this pandemic has exposed so much. And so now, Reggie, your story, I think, is resonating with more folks than ever before. And it's more important now than ever that we have folks like you come on our platform and other platforms. And, you know, you continue to tell your story every chance you get, because chances are, if it resonates with me, then it resonates to the next person that listens to it. And mind fucks that I went through was 1 in 5 people suffer from mental illness. Mm-hmm. That's sending an illusion that 4 out of 5 people are normal. That's not the case.
That's not the case.
We're all going through this. And so I just think that it is incredible that you've gotten to a place in your journey where you're able to come and share and provide a safe space for, you know, folks of all colors, folks of all religions, folks of all breeds, to be able to say, hey, this resonates with me and I'm not alone. And, you know, having that athlete platform, especially at the highest level with the NFL, just puts you one notch above, where it's like, man, if that guy's going through it and the locker room's going through it, well, then, you know what, it's not as embarrassing or it's not as taboo if I'm going through it.
Yeah, if I could just with anything, if I could just get people to just understand that, you know, we're literally living in a reality where, you know, you don't know what's going on. You don't know what's going to happen a second from now, whether you tell yourself that or not. And things are crazy. Things are crazy, unpredictable. Stuff happens. But being able to just admit, you know, hey, I'm going through it, I'm hurting, and just to talk to somebody about it, you know, how much that really will benefit you just by talking about it. Talk about your problems.
Yep.
Talk about them.
They become real. You can, you can handle, you can deal with it. When you bring it outside of your being and you put it out into the world, there's so many people that want to help. And, you know, like one of the guests that we said, you know, it was like, you got to sit in your shit. And as funny as that sounds, like whether it was when you were 10 years old, 20 years old, 50 years old, if something is bothering you, it's not just going to go away. So stop pretending that it is, address it. And then let's compound positive things on top of that instead of negative things that we all have to unravel just to get back to sitting our own shit.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I even tell people about the fact that, like, when I got done, I had to go to a treatment center twice for 30 days. Because, and that's why I even speak about this stuff now, because I was dealing with 27 years worth of shit. And when you're dealing with that much stuff, therapy isn't going to be enough. Like, I was going once a week, it wasn't enough. And I so badly want people to not have to go through that, even though treatment was great and my therapists were awesome and they were great and it saved my life. Like, it could have been avoided if I just had somebody that I could just open up to, that I was in an environment that was welcoming for me to just talk about it. I probably would have played football longer, but at the same time, like, I had to stop because I was going literally nuts because I was not dealing with this problem and I couldn't talk about it enough when this cancer had just grown up for so long. And that's the thing that scares me about what's going on right now. I mean, it gives me hope that people are talking about things, but it scares me because there's just so many, it's not happening fast enough where people are talking about their issues quick enough and getting it out there. So that's the thing that it's, you know, that's why I talk as much as possible. That's why when you even reach out to me, I was just like, dude, whatever you want to talk about, I'm an open book.
Wow.
Like, because right now it's like, I'm trying to save lives here.
Well, and I think that, you know, whether it's former athletes, current athletes, chances are the stories aren't too different. And so, you know, we're bringing on folks that are across the spectrum and we're just giving them the platform to tell their journey. And I got to be honest, when we started this Checkpoint deal, this isn't where we saw it going, but this is so much bigger than we could have ever imagined. And the fact that we're able to give you a platform where, you know, athletes, athletic directors, other athletes, you know, at the professional level are listening to this. That's ultimately what this whole thing's about. Reach one and teach one, Reggie. And I got to tell you, you are doing, you're just doing work that if it's possible, that's better than the NFL, man. In my eyes, this is so much bigger. And, you know, from Checkpoint, we love that you were, you know, willing to come on and share your story. So before we wrap up here, we've been asking every guest this question, and boy, I'm excited to hear your answer. So Reggie, if you could tell the listeners one thing that you've done in your life that you would recommend they do or experience in theirs, what would that be and why?
Can I have two things?
It's your world, Reggie. You can do whatever you want, man.
One, talk to a therapist. Oh my God. Go talk to somebody. Like, we're all going through it. We all have our own problems. No problem too big, too small. Talk to somebody. Like, don't let it blow up on you like it did for me. Like, just, you don't want to go through that. You don't want to live through that. You don't want to go through the suicidal ideation and all that crap. Like, the drinking, and you don't want to do that. Like, you don't want to, like, ripping your family apart. The other thing I would say is believe in yourself and be your best, your own cheerleader more than anybody else. Like, because during that,
All right, guess we're having some technical difficulties with Reggie. Let's see if we can get him back in here. All right, folks. Well, we're having some technical difficulties on this side. Unfortunately, we have a cliffhanger, so that means we just have to bring him back for part two. But that was Reggie Walker, ex-NFL football player, life coach, and public speaker. We're going to drop all the links behind here so that you guys can go ahead and follow his movement as he's continuing to just advocate for the right things for the right reasons. And as always, listeners, this is another time for you guys to look in the mirror and check yourself.